Brown against Indianapolis.
Ms. Garrison, is that for the entire thing? Just to get to this. I'm kind of enjoying it.
Mr. Sawowski.
May it please the court, my name is Brian Sawowski, and I represent the plaintiff appellant Marva Brown. This is another employment discrimination case before the court. This case arose in the Southern District of Indianapolis Division. Ms. Brown filed an employment discrimination lawsuit against the City of Indianapolis. The City of Indianapolis moved for summary judgment, which was subsequently granted. Ms. Brown would submit that the district court erred in granting the summary judgment because there were, in fact, genuine issues of material fact.
But I have the same question for you that I did in the last case, which is, where in this record can one find that the city's decision to enforce its residency requirement against Ms. Brown was based in any way on her race? It had enforced the same rule against, if I'm recalling correctly, six other employees who had been fired for losing the job in the case of the two comparables that you focus on. And I agree, by the way, with you that they're comparable vis-a-vis this rule. I don't think the fact they had a different job matters. But Adair and Devaney present different records to the city. Adair has an extensive record to show that he's got a bona fide residence in Marion County, and Devaney winds up getting fired and then reinstated when it turns out that there's been a mistake made and he really does live there. So I'm having a lot of trouble seeing where a jury could find that this is racially based.
Well, Your Honor, with all due respect, the evidence submitted on, first of all, on Mr. Devaney, he was not terminated, and he resided outside the city of Indianapolis.
He was fired back in 2009, and then when it turns out that the father was wrong about what he was doing in the estranged wife's house, he gets reinstated.
Right, and there was no question regarding his residency. So
he's first fired for violating the residency policy, and there are other people, the city says, who were fired for violating that policy.
But
whereas Ms. Brown presents what the city evaluates as a weak package of evidence to show that she's got a bona fide residence there.
The example she submitted in Adair and Spencer Devaney, they were both white Caucasian males.
So what? I mean, Mr. Adair has 10 years of federal tax filings, utility bills. He's got an affidavit from the uncle that he lives with. He's got a driver's license with his in-county residence. I mean, yes, he is a white male, but he's got a significant package of evidence to show that he really lives in Marion County, even though he owns property in a different county.
Well, and precisely, that's the court focused on what evidence he submitted. What I would submit to the court that Ms. Brown also was employed for the city of Indianapolis since 2004. At the time this arose, she had an employment record of over 6 years. She likewise submitted a lease agreement that showed she was renting property in Marion County.
It was not the same quality of evidence, and the city made the evaluation. Again, you know, it's one thing to say the city evaluates both packages of evidence, finds one persuasive as to Marion County residents, and finds the other is not persuasive. That's not racially discriminatory. That's just evaluating the evidence. It thinks hers is much weaker. You know, there's this, it's not really a very formal lease agreement, and the amount of money is extremely suspicious. And it's not the same package.
Your Honor, Ms. Brown would submit the inference to be to arise by that type of documentation is the fact that she's an African-American female, and the other gentlemen were Caucasian males.
Why is that an inference? I don't understand.
Because the city of Indianapolis didn't pay attention or seemed to ignore the validity of the lease she submitted, plus she submitted documentation where she was paying rent for the property. Yet with all that evidence submitted, it still chose to terminate Ms. Brown, whereas the Caucasian males were not terminated.
I don't understand what the point of this comparison is. You seem to be confusing the requirements of a prima facie case with what happens after the employer articulates a non-discriminatory reason. The Supreme Court says that once the employer articulates a non-discriminatory reason, all the apparatus of the prima facie case falls away. And the question is whether the employer is telling the truth or not. Is there any serious reason in this record to doubt that the employer actually believed that Brown was not a resident of Indianapolis? Any reason to doubt the veracity of that statement?
Ms. Brown would submit there was, based upon the documentation she submitted at the summary judgment level.
Error differs from not believing your own explanation. My question is there any reason in this record to think that would permit a jury to find that the city was consciously lying about its explanation? That's the standard.
Yes, Your Honor. Ms. Brown would submit the evidence submitted would indicate she presented evidence to the contrary, that she was, in fact, residing in pursuant to a lease agreement.
As I've just said, a contention that the city made a mistake differs from a contention that the employer is lying. I'm trying to figure out whether there's evidence of deceit. It may be that you have nothing beyond the contention that they're making a mistake, but nothing in Title VII or the other employment discrimination statutes guarantees workers freedom from error by employers. That's just not part of the statute.
Well, Your Honor, if Ms. Brown submits that it was error for the city to make the determination that she was not a Marion County resident, it had the opportunity to correct that error and didn't. When she was approached regarding the issue of residency.
Tell you that what I take away from your submission is you have no evidence of deceit beyond the contention that any explanation that the plaintiff thinks is incorrect must be a lie.
Your Honor, what the plaintiff is contending is what we would like the court to view is her evidence submitted in light of how Adair and Spencer Devaney, two other employees, were treated, and the fact that they were both Caucasian males and she's an African-American female, in terms of the city disputing her residency when she submitted very, very similar evidence to show her residency status as what was submitted by both Adair and Devaney, yet the city chose to terminate her employment. She's submitting that she believed she was discriminated against because the city didn't accept her proffered evidence of residency, yet it did for a Caucasian male.
And the city's explanation for that outcome is that we evaluated the evidence she submitted and we concluded that that was not enough to show bona fide residence at 5217 Thornley Drive, that it was really just kind of a mail drop. That's their explanation. Now, whether they believed that upon evaluating these four things that she presents, or whether that was, you know, a phony, you know, make weight, a lie, and they really just think this is a good excuse to fire her because we don't want her. We don't want African Americans on our staff. I don't know what they would think, but that's getting at the evidence Judge Easterbrook is looking for. Their non-discriminatory explanation is: we didn't think this evidence cut it, and we thought in other instances that, you know, we've had people that we've fired sometimes, and we've had people that once we investigate we keep, but we do have to evaluate the evidence. That's what they're saying.
And what Ms. Brown is submitting, and I see I'm in my rebuttal time, I'll briefly conclude.
Okay, sure.
What Ms. Brown is submitting is that what the manner in which the district court interpreted that evidence was not proper at the summary judgment stage. It appeared to weigh that evidence against the evidence that she submitted, which she would assert would be more properly left for a jury to decide, and that's why we're here today. Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Garrison.
May it please the Court. The city did not discriminate against Marva Brown when it terminated her in July of 2010. Ms. Brown moved her primary residence out of Marion County in 2008, and as a result, she was in direct violation of the city's residency policy, as well as the local city-county ordinance. Ms. Brown failed to establish a prima facie case of discrimination before the district court. She acknowledged the city's residency requirement was legitimate.
Whether she established a prima facie case.
Once
the employer articulates a reason, the Supreme Court says, the apparatus of the prima facie case goes away. And we keep repeating this, and yet in case after case, of which this is one example, all the pro and con about prima facie cases continues, even after the employer has articulated its non-discriminatory explanation.
Absolutely, and in this case, that moves directly into pretext. And not only did Ms. Brown fail to prove by a preponderance of the evidence that the city's proffered reason for her termination was a lie, but she failed to develop this argument on appeal, and under the analysis of this court, that argument is in effect waived.
So my only issue with your presentation, Ms. Garrison, is really the idea of what makes people comparable. Because, you know, if Marion County or if Indianapolis had some rule that says supervisors can live anywhere in the state of Indiana they want to, but people below, you know, effectively the GS-15 level or whatever, people below a certain level have to live in Marion County, then I would want to know, are we talking about a supervisor or are we talking about a regular staff person? But it's my understanding that the rule that Indianapolis follows is an across-the-board residency requirement for all employees of the city. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. So any employee is thus comparable vis-a-vis the residency rule. So Adair, Devaney, these other people you mentioned, so they're all in the same situation. It doesn't really matter that somebody has one job title and somebody has another, as long as the rule we're worried about applies to everybody.
Correct, and as long as it's strictly enforced amongst all the employees.
Sure. I mean, but there was some talk in the briefs and some talk in the district court's opinion about whether these guys were comparable because of their job description, and I'm just trying to make sure that we don't go down that path.
That is correct. When, as this court has articulated, when it's uneven discipline, that's the basis of the termination claim. The most relevant similarities to consider is the misconduct, the performance standards, and the disciplinary person. Whether or not how much time a person had been employed and if they're in a supervisory capacity could perhaps speak to the performance standards. More specifically, in this case, there was record evidence that
but
Ms.
Brown
had been...
nobody cares about her performance, right? They're caring about... She has 6 months... You know, if you hire somebody who's got 6 months to move to Marion County, if you fire, you know, there are these windows, right, of time. But other than that, I think this is all part of your saying not just that race had nothing to do. I thought you just had a simple case that the reason she's terminated is because it comes to light that she is not, in fact, somebody whose principal residence is Marion County.
Correct, which is
no matter what else, you know, whether she's doing a good job, bad job, indifferent job, there happens to be this rule.
Yes, absolutely. The evidence that she produced, the city believed, was not facially valid. And in fact, any doubt that the validity of the city's reason for terminating her was eliminated when she conceded during discovery that, in fact, she did live out of county at the time of her termination.
But we have to evaluate this as of the time they fire her, right?
Yes, correct. It just, as the district court noted, it gives credence to the argument that the city's proffered reason that was based in fact, that it didn't, there is no lie, that the city's reason for terminating her based on the fact that she lived out of county was in fact true. She conceded in her own deposition testimony that she lived out of county and that, according to her own testimony, the only reason she had this pseudo address in Marion County was in case the need arised.
But that does bootstrap. If the city was enforcing the Marion County residency rule only against African Americans and it was just winking for other racial groups, that would violate Title VII, even if her residence, you know, was phony. You know, that would be a discriminatory rule.
Yes.
I understand your argument that there is no such evidence in this case. I'm just trying to distinguish between the after-the-fact validation of the city's suspicions from the perspective that we need to take.
Yes, and as you earlier noted, in a one-year span between July of 2010 and 2011, 7 employees were terminated and 6 were Caucasian, and only Ms. Brown was African-American. If Ms. Brown lied to the city's HR investigator about her residency status, and to reverse the district court's entry in this case would be to reward her blatant dishonesty during that process. If there are no further questions, the city respectfully requests that the court affirm. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Solowski, anything further?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. As this court has pointed out in its questioning, I would like to specifically indicate to the judge that in Ms. Brown's interrogatory answers, she did affirm that she resided in Marion County. In addition, in opposition to the summary judgment, she submitted an affidavit in which she admitted during her investigation by the city of Indianapolis, she never admitted to living outside of the city of Indianapolis. We believe that she did submit sufficient evidence to preclude the summary judgment, to allow the case to proceed to a jury, to have a jury decide the questions of fact and not have it be disposed of at the summary judgment stage. As this court has itself recognized, that when adjudicating federal discrimination cases, a court must resist the temptation to act as jurors when considering summary judgment motions. What Ms. Brown is indicating to this court is that her case should not have been disposed of at the summary judgment stage, that there were sufficient factual issues in which a judge or jury would have to review those facts and make the decision on whether or not to award her any damages. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.